So I don't give advice as such. I certainly don't tell people what to do. I don't know what they should do. But my role is to be really collaborative, to empower the doctor in front of me, to work with them to get some really good clarity and insight about themselves and also about what they might want to do in the future.
So let's get real. Our value as doctors has significantly diminished over the last decade. So how can we turn that around by upskilling and creating rewarding and impactful careers on our own terms? Welcome to Disrupting Doctors' Careers. I'm your host, Dr. Ebena Bubbers-Jones, and I'm on a mission to connect 1 million talented doctors with the best in diverse career opportunities.
Welcome back to another episode of Disrupting Doctors' Careers. I am your host, still Ebena Bubbers-Jones, and founder of Medic Footprints. And we have come back to the value of coaching, especially if you are a doctor in career change. Coaching is not something I'd really experienced personally until actually I started moving outside of the NHS, so in public sector. And with the right coach and the right approach, coaching itself is transformational. And it's something that I believe that every doctor should have right at the beginning of their career, not when they're looking to change careers, even before they even decide to do medicine. But anyway, that's by the by. So today we're going to talk more about the value of coaching as a doctor in and beyond traditional clinical medical pathways, and also some of the common challenges that doctors face in that journey and how coaching can be a really great value add to kind of really getting through some of those blockers. Anyway, to talk about this particular topic, I'm really excited to introduce to you Ginny Freeman, who has been one of our MF approved coaches for a number of years and has really created so much value to so many doctors in the Medic Footprints community. So really excited to have her. So she is an executive career coach, specializing in doctors, but also sees other people. And so she has a wealth of information and knowledge and expertise to share on this particular topic. So welcome, Ginny. Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation today.
Thank you so much, Ebena, and thank you for the lovely introduction.
All right, so let's get started. Why should doctors even consider coaching? And let's say we're talking about career change, like Medic Footprints is all about career change. Why even consider career coaching at this stage in their journey?
Okay, well, of course, it does depend what stage they're at, but my experience of coaching a huge number of doctors and helping them with their careers is that they really value having a safe, confidential space in which to really be able to talk about some of their concerns, to talk about, you know, what might be their key skills and strengths, what sort of specialty might they want to do next if they're in that position of choosing a specialty, perhaps looking at doing some different specialty, or increasingly popular, doing kind of portfolio, where they might be doing some research, doing a PhD, but going part-time. And then, of course, really importantly, seeing some doctors who feel burnt out, disillusioned, and really unclear about whether they want to stay in medicine or not. And I'm increasingly seeing some doctors in that category.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're in the business of that. And actually, this is one of the reasons why I set up Medic Footprints over 10 years ago, is because I had that same question as to why, you know, why did I even choose medicine in the first place? Is this something I want to continue doing? And don't get me wrong, I still ask that same question today. I'm always reevaluating. Do I still want to continue with my clinical practice? Am I doing the right thing, et cetera, et cetera? And having a coach for that is a really important part of that decision-making process. So you mentioned a whole number of different things. I'd love to hear from you. What differs when it comes to the expectation that doctors have when they come to coaching than what they actually get? That makes any sense.
Yeah, it's a really important point, actually, Ebena, because, to make it very clear what I do and don't do, so I don't give advice as such. I certainly don't tell people what to do. I don't know what they should do, but my role is to be really collaborative, to empower the doctor in front of me, to work with them to get some really good clarity and insight about themselves and also about what they might want to do in the future. Of course, there's a place for me helping doctors to identify good resources where they could get the information they need. And of course, one of the most important ways of getting information at that stage of the journey is to talk to people and, you know, use a whole range of resources to identify the people they could talk to, including, of course, LinkedIn. But I certainly make clear I'm not advising, I'm not telling, I'm working really collaboratively. And I like that word because we work together on you, the doctor, and then on what, you know, you might want to do and what changes you might want to make.
Sure. I mean, I'd love to hear from you, like, why did you get into coaching and why doctors? Why is that an interest for you?
Okay, that's a great question. Well, I have been in the world of career coaching and more recently coaching as such for the last, the last 30 years.
Wow.
I have a long history of doing this work. Why I was interested, I come from a very medical family. My father was a doctor. Both my grandfathers were doctors.
Wow.
My husband's parents were both doctors, and my brother is an infectious diseases consultant. So, you know, I've been brought up in that context and environment. Unfortunately, I didn't have the sciences to be a doctor myself.
I was going to say, why aren't you a doctor? It would have been inevitable, right?
I didn't really have the sciences, but, you know, I love working in the context and environment of medicine.
No, I mean, I think that's really fascinating. And actually, you complement everything that they do. I mean, do you end up coaching them in some ways, informally, through some of the conversations?
I mean, of all the people I've mentioned, I'm afraid the only person alive now is my brother. And being an infectious diseases consultant of age 69, he's now semi-retired.
Wow.
And he's director of a clinic in Wales for doing research into vaccines.
Oh no, great. So going back to some of the common challenges that you've also mentioned that doctors face. So let's stick with burnout. Let's start with burnout, because that's one of the big challenges that then lead us to think, actually, is this the right career move for me? I think one of the biggest concerns that doctors have when they come to coaching is like, actually, am I in the right place to make a decision now that I'm burnt out? So, I guess the question is, what kind of patterns do you see in doctors who are burnt out? And is coaching a best solution for them in that space?
So, in terms of patterns, I often see doctors actually before burnout, fortunately, but you know, in those sorts of cases, they're perhaps beginning to lose some sense of achievement, some sense of really doing the work that they want to do. Exhaustion, of course, and sometimes a kind of lack of empathy. You know, they often haven't got quite to that stage, but certainly that sense of sort of disillusionment and, you know, often anxiety about, can I carry on doing this? And if I can't, what else can I do? And that's a real biggie.
Okay. And with regards to the process of like changing careers, especially when you're going through burnout, I know it's a bit of a, you know, how long is a piece of string? How long should someone expect to actually start making those changes, start seeing changes in their lives? What have you experienced?
Yeah. And as I said, hopefully, you know, I am seeing doctors before they've actually, you know, most cases got to that severe stage of burnout. But so I'm seeing doctors who feel very invested in medicine, even though psychologically it's not feeling right for them. Obviously, they put in the time, the energy, the money, even. There are often expectations around them to stay in medicine. So, you know, I don't want to disappoint mum and dad, or, you know, my peers are saying, well, it'll probably just get better, so stick with it. So I'm talking here about quite a lot of the factors which could keep people unhappily in medicine for too long. And a typical comment that I hear is, well, I thought I'd just do that exam and I'll just do that rotation and hopefully it'll get better. And then suddenly it feels almost too late. It feels like they're really stuck. They should have made a move earlier. Can they make a move now? So those, I would say, a lot of the factors that kind of militate against their feeling they can move outside medicine. And there's always the anxiety. And then a further point to make, if I might, here is that, you know, doctors, because they are so, you might say, closeted in the world of medicine, they often say, well, I don't have a clue what is out there. Or, you know, I know my friends do management consultancy, but I know what else is there. And, you know, what skills and strengths have I got that could possibly be transferred to another career? And I will put in a bid here for medical footprints, which I often refer doctors to. I would say there are three huge advantages here. One is they begin to see how they could apply their skills and strengths to other areas. And secondly, they see that doctors have actually moved out of medicine, often to doing something related or alternative, but doctors do make the move. And they learn about new industries and roles, even if they're not going to make a move now or in the near future.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic learning opportunity, you know, and I do encourage curiosity to keep your mind open.
Yeah, and I totally echo that. And this is one of the reasons why I started Medic Footprints, was because, you know, a lot of this is about inspiration, like seeing what's possible. What is possible for me? And, you know, our brains are wired in such a way, you know, we can be creative. But I think especially in medicine, that creativity tends to be pushed down a bit. Doesn't isn't as nurtured as much as, say, the academic side of things. And so, you know, we get to a point where we don't really know what's possible. We can't really vision what could be possible. Sky's the limit thinking. And so, you know, it's really to provide that platform of inspiration to see other people doing stuff. And then you believe that it's possible because you see someone else is actually living that. No, I totally identify with that. And I just wanted to go back to something else you said about, and we see this a lot as well, is the question as to, do I wait until I finish this exam, this rotation, this qualification, my CCT, or do I move or change before all of that? Because actually I'm not happy right now, but like my parents or someone said, I just need to finish something, or my value will only be good enough once I've finished it. So I'd love to hear a high level about how do you tackle that obstacle that like we all face. I speak to doctors all the time that say exactly the same thing, that they don't feel like they can do anything until they've finished their training in X. So yeah, I'd love to hear that.
And sort of picking up on your word that you picked up on mine was this idea about possibilities and options, because I think, you know, doctors often, because it's quite a sort of straitjacket, the training in a way, there's quite a sort of rigidity about, well, I can do this or I can do that, that kind of either or. So it's a lot about opening up possibilities, opportunities, options. I often do a brainstorm with doctors who do want to think about, you know, possibilities outside medicine or how they could combine medicine in portfolio. So I will come with some ideas. I encourage them to come with ideas. We do a lovely brainstorm in the session, and they just begin to feel, I think, a bit more optimistic about what some of those possibilities and options might be. But, you know, we also spend quite a bit of time looking at their current situation. I mean, I often get them to scale how much they're enjoying what they're doing, you know, to crystallize what are the positives, but also what are some of the real negatives. So they perhaps have a clearer insight, more crystallized into actually, you know, how are they feeling about what they're doing now, and how well is what they're doing now meeting their values and their what I call job satisfiers. So I help them get that sort of, you know, that sort of focus and crystallization. And then also, you know, perhaps to normalize some of the fear and anxiety and uncertainty, because we all feel that when we're going to make a change. So it's important to normalize that, talk about how, you know, what might help, who could help them and support them going forward. So those are some of the things that I try to help doctors with if they are thinking about making a change, and also doing some kind of action planning. So we have kind of short, medium and long term.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you pulled up those points, and particularly like normalizing the fear and anxiety and the uncertainty of change, because, and that's something that I see I've experienced a number of times, a lot of my mentees have experienced, every doctor I, anything that's somewhat different off the beaten track, it's not on a conveyor belt training pathway, you know, it does feel uncomfortable. But I always remind myself, I always remind my mentees that, you know, if you're feeling uncomfortable, that means that growth and change will happen. You know, that's the only way it can happen. Everything that you want is on the other side of uncomfortable. If you're not uncomfortable, it means you're probably just doing the same things you've been doing, and you'll probably just get the same things that you've been getting, which is not the reason why you're here. You're wanting something different. But it will, yeah, as you said, it will feel like that. But this is a process. Nothing ever happens overnight as well. And then before you know it, you know, you have to look back to realize how far you've come over time. And I totally identify with that. And I have to say, this is why career coaching is such an important part of that process, because it also helps you keep on track. It helps mitigate it in so many ways, right? Where people think they're literally jumping into this black hole of nothingness and they're all going to become destitute and unemployed for the rest of their lives, which never happens. I've never seen it, by the way, everyone. I've never seen it. And I've been doing this for a long time. But yeah, it's a genuine concern we all have, right? When we're like giving up one job. So yeah, I mean, how do you handhold doctors through that process? And like, how long does that usually take in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, you might say, how long is a piece of string?
Yes, how long is a piece of string? But I'd love to hear.
Well, you know, however, I think, you know, your point, it's not going to happen overnight. It won't happen overnight for anyone unless they're incredibly lucky in terms of moving into a different career area. So I do emphasize, you know, it's a journey, it's a process, you know, helpfully setting some kind of an action plan. But, you know, these kind of, I would say, contemporary competencies for the world of work today are things like curiosity, open-mindedness, taking a bit of a risk, being persistent, but also being open to possibilities. There's a lovely model called planned happenstance, which is have a plan, but be prepared to flex your plan and be open, because, you know, how many times do we find an opportunity pops up because we went to some conference at the last moment or we bumped into somebody? So it's that kind of open-mindedness, curiosity, being prepared to take risks, but also looking after yourself. So finding people who can support you, who can you know, talk through fears after the process with me. And I do sometimes offer that they kind of check in once a month just to tell me how progress is, because people often find accountability helpful. But it's not easy. And I do kind of, you know, stress that and normalize that, the uncertainty and anxiety.
I hear that. And that curiosity piece is really important. That open-mindedness is also very important, and that self-compassion and self-love is important. Yes. And I think, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, another thing that I see and I've experienced with doctors is that we kind of expect that our next career or our next move is going to be the one, and it has to be perfect, and it has to be the right decision, and that's going to be it. And if it's not there, that's going to be a huge problem. We'll have to go back to what we were doing before. Again, which is never the case. And again, it's getting into that kind of open-minded mindset. Oh, actually, I'm curious. I this seems interesting. I'm going to give it a go. And I'm going to give myself a certain time frame to really experience it. If it doesn't work, then I'm going to move on to something else, rather than I'm going to have to pick this and this is going to have to be it for the rest of it, otherwise I've failed. And I see that particularly when doctors moving into industry, thinking, oh, health tech, pharma, consulting, I'll just go for this and that will be my career for the rest of my life, and it has to be right. And I'm like, you don't really know what's going to be right. You know what feels right now. And that's what really you should be leaning towards. Yes. And you're never going to have the full 100% guarantee stamp that goes with it. But you know, really, really like lean into intuition. That's another thing that we don't really keep in touch with that much anymore. Your intuition is what feels right for you. Explore it. If it goes well, great. If it doesn't go well, great. You've learned a lot. Use those skills to then go for something else. So I'd love to hear from you on that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with what you said there, Urbana, because there is this sense, the either or, as I mentioned, either it's perfect or it's hopeless. And either I can do that or I can't do anything. So that I try and disabuse them of that kind of notion. There's also this very helpful notion of stepping stone type roles, so perhaps moving into pharma, doing something that isn't necessarily what you want to end up doing ultimately, but, stepping stone. Or, a smaller farmer, but eventually want to move into, one of the big five or whatever. So getting rid of that notion of right and wrong, stepping stones really helpful. And doing some really good investigation and research into a few different areas. So I often set with doctors, an action plan for doing good research. How do you do it? What are you going to do? And getting out there, it's so important to get out there and talk to people. There's a brilliant book by Professor Ibarra called Working Identities. It's such a good book. I do recommend often doctors to read that. But it is about getting out there, talking to people, trying things out a bit, this open-mindedness, accepting it's a journey and it's a process, and it's not going to be unlikely, could be. I always say you could find the perfect job immediately, but that's unlikely. And it's often keeping your hand in with medicine a bit as well, so you don't feel completely adrift and in limbo. So maybe doing some locums whilst you're researching another area, or maybe going less than full time. So because that can give you a bit more kind of an anchor to start with. So for some people.
No, brilliant. So mindset, we've touched upon it, but let's go a little bit deeper when it comes to the mindset and career change. You've mentioned in the past something called positive intelligence, right? So I know we hear about a whole variety of different types of intelligence, emotional intelligence, intelligent quotient, blah blah blah. What is positive intelligence, and how does that relate to mindset shifts and career change?
Yeah, great. I'm glad you asked that, because I'm increasingly drawing from this model with doctors and other clients too. So it's a kind of model and theory that was developed by someone called Sherzad Charmaine. And he did research, I mean, incredible research into 500,000 people, he says, at Stanford. So looking at chief executives, looking at super athletes, looking at a huge range of people. And based on a few sciences, neuroscience, sorry, excuse me, positive psychology, excuse me, and cognitive science, he superimposed this model. So if I can just explain it really simply, because I do find it very powerful to use with many doctors. So the it's based on the theory, well supported, that there are nine saboteurs, and we all have one or two saboteurs that are higher than others. And I normally race through these, and as I'm doing it, I can see doctors are identifying, oh yeah, I think that's fine. So we all have these saboteurs. One or two are often higher than the others. So if I very quickly go through them, so there's the stickler, the perfectionist, often doctors have that. There's the people pleaser. Again, often doctors have that as quite high. There's the hyperachiever, there's the victim, there's the hyper-rational, there's the hyper-vigilant. A lot of doctors have that sort of anxiety and catastrophizing. And so yes, the hyper-rational, there's the restless, there's the controller, and there's the avoider. So as I'm talking through those, doctor says, oh, I think that's a, but there is a free short PQ assessment to do online, and I often send that link. The other saboteur we all have is the judge. So we all either judge ourselves more, doctors often judge themselves very critically, or we judge the situation more, or we judge others more. So these saboteurs, they lie to us, so they tell us lies. We've developed these saboteurs through kind of early childhood and sort of surviving coping strategies, but we don't need them now. So I can go on, but I'll pause here.
No, I think that's really interesting, actually. And just the idea of self-sabotaging is something that I've really been looking into more on a personal level
Okay.
recently, and just looking at some of the, because like, you're not really aware that you're sabotaging yourself because it's yourself,
No.
right? And then I've done a lot of personal work recently and realizing actually how much I've been sabotaging my own growth. And again, a lot of that comes to mindset. A lot of that is actually in the subconscious. A lot of that is because of past traumas that you may have had, or like I've had in my life, and that's still kind of still playing out again and again. And having awareness of them is actually the first step.
Yeah.
And then using that to recognize like what changes in behavior is needed in order for me to achieve my goal that's against what my saboteur would do. Right. So, and it takes time. This is the thing. This is another thing. It's so frustrating. I'm the kind of person that's quite impatient.
Yeah.
But I recognize again, when it comes to making decisions in your life, decisions in your career, and really making sustainable change, it's about really taking on some like different habits, smaller different habits that can continue doing them over time. That makes sense.
Totally. And positive intelligence has a lovely and simple method for, you know, learning habitually to kind of manage the lies that the saboteurs tell us. So he talks about building the mental muscle. There are three things to do. Firstly, the awareness of the saboteurs, the top one or two, to start to label them. So kind of noticing every time a saboteur comes up and says, oh yeah, I need to go for that goal, and then I'll go for that, without necessarily thinking through, actually, do I really want to go for that? Am I going to enjoy the process? Am I going to enjoy the journey? Or, you know, with the hypervigilant, it's all going to be terrible. I'm going to fail that exam. It's going to be a disaster. I hear that quite a bit. That's the hypervigilant immediately dropping into the sort of catastrophizing. So the first stage is to label and notice actually some of the negative words that the saboteur is telling you. The second one is, and this is very powerful, to do what he calls PQ reps. So these are little mindful exercises. And the idea is, and I often get doctors to do this, to do up to 15 minutes a day of these little mindful exercises. So it's anything that takes you out of your head and into your senses. And you can integrate these into your daily routine. So it doesn't have to take up lots of extra time. So just, you know, when you're washing your hands, you notice the temperature of the water, you notice the feel of the water on your hands. Just, you know, for a few minutes, few seconds, actually, when you're drinking your water, you just notice the feel and the texture of the container. You notice the temperature, and then you notice how it feels when you drink the water. So I encourage doctors to integrate these into their routines so it doesn't, you know, add extra burden. And to do it habitually so that when you're in a stressful situation, you can just flip into using one of these PQ reps. It doesn't have to be noticeable. It could be, you know, just literally staring at something for a few seconds just to get you out of that, your head. And the third bit of the model is it moves you into what he calls the sage, the wise side of your brain. And by doing these PQ reps, you're strengthening your neural pathways. And from this sage perspective, you feel grounded, you feel that you can still the mind and the ruminations and just take a new perspective, because the saboteurs are, you know, linked to negative emotions. So just doing that can pause you, get you into the perspective, you stand back, and then you can you know, use some of the positive emotions and from a grounded perspective.
That makes absolute sense. That sounds like a really valuable tool for pretty much anyone, it sounds like, especially dealing with those stressful situations. And so the last point is really tips. From all of your 30 years of experience, you know, working as a career coach and with doctors, what are the top tips that you would offer doctors who are listening to this and thinking, hey, I'm stuck, I've got no idea what I want to do moving forward? Because actually, you know, the research that we've done this year, most of the doctors in our community just don't know what to do. They know what they don't want, they don't know what they want, and they're otherwise lost. So what tips would you give them in their own career journey moving forward?
Well, I would say come and see a good career coach. That would be one major tip, because it's quite hard to do this on your own. And I will just say, you know, on your own, people can either take a scattergun approach, you know, well, I could do this, but then I could do that. I could, you know, but I don't know what to do. Or either I do this or I can't do anything. So those are really unhelpful strategies that often doctors or anyone really can end up doing if they're on their own. But, you know, a key tip for all doctors really is self-compassion. It's really, really important to be looking after yourself and turning the wonderful compassion that so many doctors have towards their patients inward, and really being kind to themselves, and then taking more of a realistic look at, well, you know, I really do have these skills and strengths. I really have achieved this, that, and the other. And being kind, you know, I'm really unhappy doing what I'm doing. You know, why shouldn't I? I've got to work for the next 40 years of my life, whatever. Why shouldn't I enjoy what I'm doing? And if this is not working for me and not suiting me, you know, why shouldn't I give myself new opportunities?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Be kind to yourself. That is one of the top ones that I would have said as well. That self-compassion piece. Look after yourself. Yeah, and find a great coach and don't do it on your own. This is the interesting thing. I mean, obviously we've built this huge community of Medic Footprints, but the reality is most doctors going through this, it does feel so lonely. Regardless of if you can talk to other people, you are on your own personal journey. But this is life stuff. This is what makes life life, right? And it's through this learning and through this process that the opportunities that you'll find beyond it will be limitless.
Absolutely. And I love the word life stuff. And I always say, you know, we're looking at your career, but it's in the context of your whole life. You can't separate the two. So, you know, it's an invitation to look holistically.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time, Julie. As I said, you've done such amazing work with our community so far, and I know you continue to do so. Obviously, you're on our website on the medicfootprints.org/coaches, but how else can doctors reach out to you if they want to, yeah, test the waters, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely. Is that a question? Are you asking
yeah,
me?
That is an actual question. Yeah. How do they best reach out to you?
Yes, thank you for that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, I have a website, which is Reignite Careers. But, you know, basically, it's easier really just to email me. And that's normally how people do that, which is jilly.careers@gmail.com.
Awesome. That's
gillly.careers@gmail.com.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, and continue to do the amazing work that you're doing in our community. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Abena.
Thank you.